This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. This is the Reformed Media Review, episode number 22. Today we discuss Curse Your Branches, an album by indie musician David Bazan. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. This is episode number 22, and my name is Camden Busey. I am pleased to welcome over to the studio Jonathan Brack, who is admissions counselor at Westminster Theological Seminary in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello, Camden. It's good to be here.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming over. We also have, as you would expect, the other half of the tag team, Jared Oliphant, who is director of admissions at Westminster. How you doing, Jared?
I'm pleased to be the other half, Camden.
Well, yeah. The other half of the admissions tag team representatives.
Tag team back again.
Yeah. Oh, good media reference.
That sounded like cultural exegesis.
Yeah. Right.
Well, today we have an excellent program. At least we have an excellent subject. Whether or not we execute is another question. But we're going to be speaking about the music of David Bazan, who is an indie artist and most notably the founder of a band called Pedro the Lion. He founded that, I believe, back in 1997 and came to some fame, at least developed a little niche for himself and his group in the Christian music community, specifically with college students and whatnot, but has since gone on to record a solo album, and we're going to be speaking about that because of the content therein. The music is one thing, but the lyrics are basically an express rejection of his Christian faith, and we're going to treat those apologetically today, getting into that. So, Jared, why don't we start with you, and you can just explain to us something about his music and something about your interest in this subject.
Sure. In one sense, it's a little bit late talking about this album, just because there was it has already come out, and when it did come out, there was a media flare-up, really, of people analyzing the lyrics. You can find a lot of reviews online from both Christian and non-Christian perspectives. People just wanted to talk about it because of its subject matter, just dealing with faith issues. But I wanted to address it. It was pointed to me, actually, by my brother, who is a music journalist. He has written for Spin and Christianity Today and a few other pieces. But he kind of let me know the subject matter and where this guy was coming from and his background with Pedro the Lion. And so that was just kind of put in my back file, my library. And then when we got more into media reviews, I thought this would be a great one to just kind of jump off of and see where it took us in terms of just a reform critique of what this guy is talking about. Because he's definitely coming from a specific stance. So I started listening to it. I read along with the lyrics, gave it to Jonathan and Camden, and you guys listened to it and analyzed it as well. And Jonathan, I think you spent a lot of time with the lyrics themselves. I was kind of listening to it from a musical perspective with the lyrics in mind, but you kind of took the opposite perspective. You're really analyzing the lyrics.
Yeah, the first thing that struck me about the album when you first played it to me was the way the guy writes his lyrics. And it was particularly unique in the fact that it was David Bazan basically saying, I don't care for a general God or religion. It's the evangelical God that he's lashing out against. And so that struck me. And so that I wanted to, you know, listen to more of what he had to say. And that was one of the reasons why I as well was pretty excited about doing this review. Simply because a lot of people on that have reviewed this album, they usually stick to the music. And every once in a while, they'll talk about the lyrics. And if it's a non-Christian, when they mention the lyrics, they'll say something to the effect of, you know, yeah, it's really cool how he's, you know, we have this sort of proponent of agnosticism, you know, giving us some lyrics. And then the Christian review is usually like, oh, that's really sad. And it's a really, you know, we should really pray for him and stuff like that. But nobody, to my knowledge, there probably is out there, but as far as me looking for it, was actually giving him an answer to these lyrics.
Right.
And
a defense, in effect, and an apologia.
Right, giving a defense, and not in a harsh way, but, you know, just honestly admonishing the person for saying, you know, these things about his creator God. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we should say it is a sad thing, and we should love him and seek his return to the Christian community. But also, when one blasphemes, we need to defend.
Yeah,
God doesn't need us to defend him, but as apologists and as just Christians, we should always be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, 1 Peter 3:15. And in a sense, people are listening to this stuff, and he's raising some difficult questions, or at least on the surface seem to be difficult questions. So we want to provide a defense and call him to account for his sin.
Right. Yeah,
and there's nothing wrong with that, and that's part of the job of the apologist.
Yeah, and there are a lot of parallels between some of the things that he mentions and things that we've heard before, you know, from Hitchens and other people. This is kind of those things articulated in artistic form. So they're a little bit more subtle, and you have to pay attention to them a little bit more, which I think makes it even more important for us to really take a closer look at some of those issues.
Now, one thing that struck me as I listened to this, I've heard plenty of music out there that is against Christianity, is explicitly against God and defaming him, or rejecting him, or calling him names, whatever you want to say. I don't think I've heard anything as specific and as informed as I've heard here.
Right.
And it doesn't come across as, it is with an ill intent, but what I'm trying to say is it doesn't come across with that vitriolic tone.
Right.
But it is very sharp and pointed, we should say. The album is called Curse Your Branches.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, as we begin, just read one line from the title track. He's speaking about the fall in many of these things. He's calling God the author of sin. And here is one line in which he says, "All fallen leaves should curse their branches for not letting them decide where they should fall and not letting them refuse to fall at all." Et cetera, et cetera. So he is lashing out against God for the fact that basically he didn't have a choice in being condemned because Adam fell and he's cursed, and now he should curse his branch for not giving him the choice because God set it up in a way in which mankind was going to fall. Mankind fell, therefore God is to blame. That's his thesis.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, when I first heard those lyrics, the first thing that came to mind for me was a classic example of a creature making himself out to be God. Mm. In a sense, all fallen leaves should curse their branches for not letting them decide.
Mm-hmm.
We should be the ones who decide our fate, right? We should be the ones who get to decide whether or not we even exist at all.
Didn't,
or fall at all? I mean,
didn't Paul address this question in Romans 9?
Yeah. Should the clay say to the potter, why did you make me this way? Yeah. And Paul has answered this exact.
Who are you, O man, to reply to God or to answer back to God?
Exactly. And so, go ahead.
Yeah, he probably, Jared and I were talking about this earlier today. He'd probably say something, you know, if we said that to David, he'd probably say, you know, yeah, I've heard that. And he actually even addresses that later on in the album. He gives a rebuttal to even, you know, Paul's statement of who are you, O man, to say, you know, why have you made me like this? But it's apparent that he makes himself out to be God, or he makes himself out to say that he should be God in the sense that he should have the decision of whether or not he should, quote unquote, fall or not. Mm-hmm. And that's his stance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's you know, one, not brute fact, but that's one fact that we can file away as that's a stance that David has.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just talk about the music itself for a second, I think we all three of us realize that the music itself isn't going to be everybody's cup of tea. It's a distinct genre. It's a little slow moving. I don't know. It's just got kind of a, it's not dark really, but it's just slow. And, but what's funny is it's not as dark as you would expect given the lyrics.
No.
It's sometimes contrasts with the lyrics and is, you know, sung in kind of a, not like a joyful tone, but something that just...
Folky.
Yeah, right.
It's indie. Yeah, it's good indie music. I really enjoy the music side of it. I mean, I like that genre.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean... The message in there doesn't always match the beat and the tone. It's for indie, for some indie music, it's a little upbeat.
Right.
It's definitely not emo. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, no, right,
or
shoegazer, exactly.
Or anything like that.
Not at all. And I mean, the second song called Bless This Mess, the opening line, God bless the man who falls, you would think that would be kind of this, you know, dour, down kind of tone to the music, but it's not at all. It's almost, you know, lighthearted. That's probably overstating it.
If we had the rights, we would play it for
I know.
You.
Yeah, but for those, I'm sure that there are some out there who are going to sample this on iTunes or something, so I just wanted to comment. It's a distinct flavor of music that I wouldn't say is like this hugely popular appeal, but I think it's worth listening to just to get, you know, the tone and the idea.
Yeah.
I want to continue talking about the lyrics that are involved in this album. I did want to say that we should probably get a sort of context for where he's coming from as far as his Christian world. He was raised in an Assemblies of God church, which I think all of our listeners as well as us know that a general Assemblies of God church usually teaches an Arminian gospel. But I did read an interview today that he quote-unquote said, the end of the train for me was pretty conservative reformed theology as far as, you know, the theology and the circles of Christianity he was running in. So whether or not he ever, you know, called himself reformed, we're not sure, but his background definitely is Assemblies of God. But with that in mind, with that context in mind, a lot of the things he does say is, not a whole lot, but a few of them are just a false view of Scripture in the first place. The very first song, and it's probably the very first song in the album, it's probably, if anybody's listening to it as a brand new listener, it's probably the line that will catch everybody to see, you know, what sort of posture he's in. And it's in the song Hard to Be, and in the middle of the song, the lyrics go... wait just a minute, you expect me to believe that all this misbehaving grew from one enchanted tree. And helpless to fight it, we should all be satisfied with this magical explanation for why the living die. And that's verse 2 of this song. Right off the bat, what we should, as good biblical Christians, notice is that this is a false assessment of the garden scene.
Yeah, yeah. The fall.
Right. As if our sin came from some sort of magical tree or magical fruit, right? He calls it an enchanted tree. Our sin came from the disobedience to the Lord.
Yeah. It wasn't a magic apple or something like that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And so
he talks about, like, what isn't there the magic apple or tree or something like that,
right,
in one of those songs.
Yeah, yeah, it's the first
song.
So he
ate the poison fruit, he refers to. He refers to a few kind of just, you know, mystical language. I mean, go ahead. I think you were making the point that I was.
Us.
Yeah. Well, what I was.
If you're wondering.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, as soon as I heard that, I thought, man, this guy, I don't know if he ever read any. Good exegesis of Genesis 1, or if he even introduced the idea of letting Scripture interpret Scripture with what takes place there in that scene. But it's apparent that he doesn't, if he's making the conclusion that it's a magical explanation that we become sinful because of a magical fruit. So that's, or an enchanted tree. That's the first thing that struck me was if you're critiquing Christianity, you have a false idea of the garden scene right off the bat.
Yeah.
And what I'd secondly say to that is I would tell him what a proper view of that scene is, which is it's called the tree of knowledge and good and evil because it's there for knowledge of good and evil are to present judgment. Right. And Adam and Eve, or Adam's supposed to judge the serpent at the tree, and he's not supposed to partake of the fruit until he has proved himself to be obedient to judge which is actually, you know, the fate of man is to, you know, judge the angels, according to 1 Corinthians. So,
but even as Eve decided herself to take from the fruit, she acted as judge of right and wrong by deciding what she would do rather than listening to God's word.
Right.
She, in effect, placed herself as judge over God and the serpent, deciding which one to listen to.
Right. And the partaking of the fruit was actually a representation of being in covenant with the devil. So she's taking part of the fruit and at the table of Satan, as opposed to, you know, taking the fruit in the table of the Lord. And so,
yeah, and Voss gets into some interesting things there in terms of the tree of life.
Right.
He would see it as a sacramental tree to be partaken of even before the fall.
Right.
Right.
So it's a little strange there, but it's an interesting thought. But yet, clearly, David Bazan is not understanding a good anthropology and right. A theology of the tree and yeah. what had happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says later on in that song, he says, information made us no good. It's as if, you know, Adam and Eve are like, you know, I wonder, and we're just sort of like neutral beings.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder what it would be like as opposed to, you know, an act of disobedience to what the Lord plainly made clear to them. And so, yeah, so that's the first thing that struck me about the first song was...
Yeah, and the first song is packed, too. I mean, later, I just want to read another line, or another kind of stanza. So I swung my tassel to the left side of my cap, knowing after graduation, like this process of, I guess, like re-examining. Yeah, like he graduated from Christianity. I mean, that's...
Into, you know, well, yeah. Or graduated from being on probation to being condemned for all eternity.
Right, right. And, you know, he sees this... I'll continue. There would be no going back and no congratulations from my faithful family, some of whom are already fasting to intercede for me. And that's where kind of the sadness comes from. You know, you see that's a real struggle. I'm sure... I don't know the background of the family, but if this is true, if what he's saying is true, that's got to be just, you know, heart-wrenching for the family to watch someone go through something like this.
Yeah, he said it was a, when I heard him talk about the song, he said it was just a general observation about Christianity and fasting. But then he came to realize after his mom had heard the song that she still practices fasting every Sunday morning. And so he didn't realize how actually direct it referred to his family. But nevertheless, it is, as you said, it's sad.
Yeah.
In the sense that his family is, through this album, you know, seeing his departure.
Right.
And, it, you know, just like Eve, he sees himself as kind of his eyes opened. But we know that it's actually not the way that your eyes are supposed to be open. It's kind of the opposite.
Exactly.
Hard to be, he said he named that song Hard to Be, because he said, you know, still whether or not it's because of the fall that we're bad people or some, it's still, you know, he's struggling with the question, is it still just hard to be a decent human being? Or is it hard to be a decent human being because of the fall? Is it hard to be a decent human being in spite of the fall? And is sort of left as an open-ended question. So that's his intent on writing that song.
That one's kind of a catchy one. I mean, the words are terrible, but I listen to these, and I'm like, I'm tapping my toes. Hard to be.
Yeah, you do,
I'm
sing
like,
along.
Yeah, this is great. Oh, wait, this is horrible.
This is blasphemy.
Yeah.
And that just goes to show the danger of music, in a sense, of what we listen to. We have to be conscious of what the actual lyrics are. People say, I just like the tune. Well, it gets in your head.
Right. Yeah,
and this is a false gospel.
Yeah,
it's no gospel.
Yeah,
it's a relishing in condemnation, which is a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, right.
Jonathan.
Yeah.
perusing over some more lyrics. There's just a lot to go off of. You could read 100 lines if you wanted to.
Right. I want us to move to one of the songs.
Be a long episode.
Part two.
All right.
Well, there's a lot we could talk about, but Bearing Witness.
Bearing Witness.
Is, I think, is the best example in the album of him being utterly inconsistent with himself. he just totally is self-referentially incoherent in the song. I don't know if he sees it, but let me explain.
Well, look at his knowledge. He's speaking of ancient autographs. I mean, this guy is not ignorant.
That's the whole point.
I mean, this isn't like he just doesn't know better. He knows better.
Right. And his critique is not against bare theism. No. We should just point that out right away. Because like we said before, he's referring to the garden scene. He's referring to autographs. He's referring to scriptural events and truths.
He's understanding them correctly.
Exactly.
But he rejects them.
And so you can tell this guy has been in the evangelical world and knows the language and knows... he can anticipate the arguments that I'm sure he's getting. And so he, in one sense, he's kind of one step ahead of the other guys who just have grown up atheist.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's true. The song Barry Witness starts out, "I clung to miracles I have not seen from ancient autographs I cannot read." And I actually listened to a podcast about him talk about that. And he said, ancient autographs, there he's referring to, the first time he actually read about the nature of the canon and higher New Testament criticism, New Testament, Old Testament criticism, where he realized that, these are his own words, that the evangelical understanding of scripture and inerrancy, he even said the word inerrancy, was a modernist conception. And so he uses that as...
stopped others from falling away.
Right. Well, he says that in the sense that that's a bad thing. Like, inerrancy is just like this modernist conception.
Yeah.
And, it
seems to be the trend these days to say that.
Yeah. Right. That's common.
But then if you listen to the lyrics in this song, he goes on, the next line is, "And though I've repented, I'm still tempted, I admit, but it's not what bearing witness is. Too full of prophecy and fear to see the revelation right in front of me. So sick and tired of trying to make the pieces fit because it's not what bearing witness is." So the revelation right now, so are you saying that you're an empiricist? So like in other words, he's saying, I'm tired of trying to make the pieces fit when, what is obvious is just right in front of me. And so he's going on and critiquing the world based on his sense data that he gets from his brain. That is the most modernist concept that you could purport, that you could, uplift as far as a way in which to interpret the world.
Mm-hmm.
So
science.
Don't be a denier. The science is in. Science.
Ancient autographs, that's a modernist concept. Yeah. But, by the way, I am a modernist, and it's the revelation right in front of me. And so, that's another example of just absolutely being self-referentially incoherent there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we talked about before, there's a difference between, what I would say to David Bazan as an individual and what I would say to David Bazan's argument. As arguments, and I think those are probably a couple different things. I told Jonathan earlier, I would love to have a conversation with the guy and see where he's coming from. I imagine I could be dead wrong about this. Is self-referential incoherence may not bother him. He may he may be okay with that. I don't know. It depends on how structured he is, but he may just be kind of in the process or use that kind of language,
right?
So I don't know,
or say something like, I'm just. Yeah, I'm in the progress. I'm on a journey, and I'm struggling with this stuff. And so far, I don't have enough, weight to say that there is a God, and the God of the Old Testament and the New Testament is, the God that there is. So,
And what I hope he doesn't realize it, but I hope he someday realizes is he's claiming these things that really do, on his part, require a rigorous defense. I mean, he's attacking things and saying things aren't true that require very deep work, a lot of heavy criticism and, analytical argument. And I don't know if he's done the work on that. He may have, but I don't see it in here.
I wouldn't doubt it. He seems to be a pretty sharp guy.
He does,
but
yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We don't have much to go on other than the lyrics and the various interviews we've heard.
Right.
What are some other songs that we want to... critique.
We can critique, and it's the whole song is just in. It's just obviously against a biblical conception
The whole album, you mean?
This whole song, though. You know, a lot of times in the songs, he'll break off and talk about his family and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this song is just all the way. It's called When We Fall.
Oh, okay.
I'll read it. With the threat of hell hanging over my head like a halo,
yeah.
I was made to believe in a couple of beautiful truths that eventually had the effect of completely unraveling. The powerful curse put on me by you when you set the table and when you chose the scale. Did you write a riddle that you knew they would fail? Did you make them tremble so that they would tell the tale? Did you push us when we fell? If my mother cries when I tell her what I've discovered, then I hope she remembers she taught me to follow my heart. Whatever that means. And if you bully her like you've done me with fear of damnation, then I hope she can see you for what you are. What I am afraid of, what am I afraid of? Whom did I betray? In what medieval kingdom does justice work this way? If you knew what would happen and made us just the same, then you, my lord, can take the blame.
I know. That's the most direct and blasphemous one that I heard, and also a very good song. I mean, uh-huh. In terms of the music.
Yeah, it's like, very catchy. It's like,
it's catchy, and you listen, and he just kind of says, then you, my lord, can take the blame, and it ends.
Right.
And that was the first one I believe I listened to.
Uh-huh.
And I was just kind of, it's almost good, like, music. I'm like, did he just say that?
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, my goodness, this is...
It's almost as if, like, Tom Petty, just in the middle of one of his albums, it just throws a song in. He's like, yeah, you know, good driving music, and then, what was that?
I know.
But, that's definitely...
That's the nature of this album. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd encourage you to listen to some samples or listen to it. You can go to grooveshark.com and listen to a lot of it, or itunes.com, maybe at last.fm, but... you know, take a listen for yourself. I mean, with a critical ear, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really an anomaly mm-hmm. in the music world, I think.
Yeah, it is. And I think another reason why I wanted to bring it up is because it's kind of a lightning rod for a lot of the subjects that you talk about when you talk about other music anyway.
Yeah.
There's a lot of secular music out there that has hints of these kinds of things, but maybe not as explicit.
Right.
There's a lot of other music out there that we like just sonically. That may have, you know, undertones. So this really brings it to it ahead, you know.
Yeah.
Right. One thing I would want to say about the song is that one way into giving a Christian critique of just the lyrics, you know, would be the fact that he's trying to defend his mom in the middle of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And so he obviously has, you know, a strong connection to his mom.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that his mom is a good person, and he believes that his mom doesn't deserve that. And he even believes that his mom exists. For all those things to be true, you have to have a working system to give an account for why those are true. The problem with David Bazan in, you know, questioning everything here that he does in this song, he once again makes himself out to be God. I don't want to believe what God has to say, but I am going to believe that my mom's a good person and that she doesn't deserve this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for us, on the surface, it seems that he's just arbitrarily deciding what he believes. But we know that that's not the case. Everybody has a system, a grid for why they decide these things.
Yeah.
So that would be a way into critique, is just to ask David, why is it that you think that your mom doesn't deserve it? Or why is it that you think your mom even exists? Just so that we can get a working system for what it is that you believe.
One thing that's interesting about this, and it betrays something of his conscious metaphysical beliefs, is that he doesn't reject God's existence.
Right.
He doesn't go about saying, I used to believe this, and now I'm wiser, and now I know that God is just a myth.
Uh-huh.
He sings to God as God is a person and rejects him.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's what struck me the most, the informed rejection, but also that he is rejecting God, but still speaking to him and appealing to him. And I don't think it's just a poetic structure either.
I agree.
I think it's actually his psychological state.
Yeah. And what I would say, this is strong language, but in a real technical sense, that is kind of a satanic critique of God, because we know Satan believes that there's a God. He yeah. knows that he's out there, but he has rejected everything
right.
about God.
And he mocks it. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not kind of that classic atheism. It right. really, it's kind of a theism of uh-huh. sorts, a satanic theism almost.
So as Christian apologists, we usually go about things understanding that all men know God, mm-hmm. but reject him in unrighteousness. They suppress the truth in unrighteousness.
Mm-hmm.
But usually the way it works out for most unbelievers is they consciously reject God. They propose a system in which he's not there and operate on that basis.
Right.
But because they're made in the image of God, they know deep down that there is one.
Yeah.
But usually it's kind of a subconscious thing. I don't know a better way to put that.
Mm-hmm.
But in their, they've suppressed, I guess what I should say is they've suppressed the truth so much
mm-hmm.
that they don't even acknowledge that God exists, even mm-hmm. though in their inner man, they certainly know that because right. they can't get rid of that sense.
Yeah.
Now we look at David Bazan and he's an interesting apologetic subject.
Yeah.
Because what we see is somebody whose suppression is, it's not so much a suppression, but it's a rejection.
Right.
That the knowledge of God is right there. The knowledge of God and the knowledge of who God says he is right there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a rejection of that anyway.
Yeah.
And you just don't usually find that yeah. with unbelief.
Well, and you have that going on, and you have paralleling with that the rejection of so many evangelical truths, you know, like
right.
the fall and other things. Mm-hmm. So trying to, like, as you said, Jonathan, sort out like a system, I think would be very interesting.
Right.
I don't know what, you know, how you would track that, but.
Right. I did do some homework just to see if he does have some sort of, you know, system, some sort of philosophy that he clings on to. And I couldn't get anything offline. All I could tell is that, from this album and from other blogs is that, he's a deep thinker.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
and, that,
clearly.
And that's usually what it is these days with,
like a Nicholas Fain.
Yeah, right. That Saturday Live character.
Good SNL reference. But, that'll be another media review.
No, but usually that, I mean, it is kind of jokey. That's just, you know, that is enough proof to say that, you know, I can give an account for something. It's just that I think about deep things.
Yeah.
And that supposedly gives a valid check to say, oh, well, he's a good artist or he's a profound thinker because, mm-hmm. You know, he reads Flannery O'Connor. And he's read some poetry.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well
that
he
kind of like, yeah, he kind of gets some of Flannery O'Connor's shock value going for him, doesn't he?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Not
yeah.
so much in blood and gore, but just in, oh.
Yeah.
And that's funny. Flannery O'Connor likes to really provoke her readers into having to make a moral decision.
Hmm.
And she shocks the reader into doing that. She's, to my knowledge, a Roman Catholic,
mm-hmm.
Or was. And so will intentionally really shock you when you mm-hmm. read her so that you have to make a moral decision to say that is wrong.
Right.
Or something like that.
Right.
And David Bazan, on the other hand, is writing music that when the Christian, you know, the conservative Christian hears it, it's shocking.
Yeah.
And right. you likewise make the same declaration.
Uh-huh.
That is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, in terms of writing music, we should also point out, he's got to be a deep thinker. I mean, mm-hmm. For anyone who has tried to just write a basic song, or any songwriters out there, musicians or whatever, I think I hope you'll appreciate the difficulty of making an album like this. Just constructing the lyrics the way he does, pouring
right.
so much
yeah,
content.
He's a craftsman, definitely.
He is. And then, mm-hmm. you know, having it sound generally appealing, whether mm-hmm. it's your taste or not, it's mm-hmm. not like horrible music. But that in itself would be an achievement.
I couldn't write. You know,
one of my life dreams, and this will probably never happen, but one of my life's dreams
life
is to
dreams
make,
by Camden
yeah,
Bracey.
Get this. There may be a listener out there who has
on your bucket
who
list.
Has a skill such as a musical skill in artistry such as David Bazan and also a correct theology could actually fulfill my dream for me. I want a double disc concept album, 33 tracks. One track for each chapter of the Westminster Confession of Faith.
Oh, wow. That's really specific right. for a bucket list.
Yeah. That's not my bucket list, but I would love to listen to that, like an indie album, or I love other music like Wilco, something experimental like that. But the concept for each song, the subject matter would be, you know, chapter one,
yeah,
chapter two.
Well,
you know, and you get solid good theology. Like, you know, I'm not for redeeming the culture, and eventually in the future we're going to speak about our theology of culture and how we engage in that. But we think about the Christian's role and how we should go about developing music.
Yeah.
That's the kind of project we should be into, I think.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing we should be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Being good interpreters of God's revelation, reinterpreters as creatures, and taking that and making art with it, doing those
Would
sorts of things.
Would Article 7 be light or folky or dark, you know? We would know nothing of God unless it condescended. You know, would it be sort of dark? I would.
That's
just
a good
wondering,
question.
You know,
what genre would you do?
Genre for Article 5. That's what I want to know.
Chapter
too.
5.
To be
serious, talking about, you know, genre and content, and maybe we should talk about this some other time. But
and a theology of music or art, does the content have to match the tone, or is there such a thing?
That's a question. And the example I was going to give was there are a number of rap artists in the Philadelphia area. Whatever you think about rap,
like Shylin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's a good. His content is reformed.
Oh, it's great. And he's speaking about Nadab and Abihu and how God roasted them, and he sings about the atonement, and it's really solid theology.
Yeah,
to just a regular hip hop beat.
Yeah, in a very unorthodox medium. So anyway, that's probably a subject for another day.
Yeah.
But just to throw another wrench in the whole content style discussion.
Right. But as we mentioned before, it seems a little strange, the nature of Bazan's lyrics and the tune that he has set them to.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. That is kind of funny. I've always wondered that, because can you name a sad song that doesn't have really sad lyrics?
Well, I'm wondering what you mean by sad song. Do you mean by sad in its sound, or
yeah, like a depressing song, you know, my wife left me, or, you know, somebody died.
Yeah, that would be a sad song.
Can you give an example?
No, I mean, not off the top of my head.
I just, okay, we could probably cut that. But
sure.
Anyways, let's talk about...
rewind the tape.
Let's talk about this last song that he has called In Stitches. And there's one, I referred to it earlier, but there's one thing I want to talk about, which is, it's at the end of the song. He says, on long walks with my daughter, who is lately full of questions about you, when Job asked you the question, you responded, who are you to challenge your creator? Well, if that one part is true, it makes you sound defensive, like you have not thought it through enough to have an answer, like you might have bit off more than you could chew.
Mm. Gosh. Yeah, and that, I mean, Job is another example of what we were talking about that Paul gets at. This is probably David Bazan's answer to Paul.
Right. Sounds like God's 9. Being defensive.
Yeah. Right. Because, I mean, you know, if you can psychologize him for a second, it's the question is answered with a question. And I think that's his main contention.
Right. And I don't know if growing up he ever got a thorough exegesis of Romans 9 or that response that Paul and gives and that Job is given, but, you know, if you think about the question, it is a sort of ad hominem argument, but it's a good ad hominem argument in the sense that who are you
right.
is the question.
Yeah.
And so in order for you to even ask the question why, the Lord is, I mean, I don't want to be cheesy and say the Lord's kind of doing a presuppositional move here, but he's asking, you know, an ontological question. Who are you? Give me like your whole system of who you are so that you can ask this question. Because if you honestly answer that question, you have to assume, you have to be sitting on my lap to answer that question. You have to assume you are a created, you know, person. It is created in my image.
Mm-hmm.
It was created for the purpose to glorify me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so through answering that question of who am I, it defeats the former question of, you know, why did you make me like this?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know if David Bazan has ever thought about it that way at all.
Yeah.
Or has ever even been given, you know,
thought about the necessary preconditions of his own world and life view.
Right. Right. Is he epistemologically self-conscious?
Is he, does he understand a synthetic a priori?
That's my question. That would be my first question to him. Just kidding. Which, but yeah, what we were saying earlier, what we were talking about earlier is, those would be probably our critiques of David Bazan's lyrics as a system of thought. But another good question to ask is, you know, what would you say to him
uh-huh.
as a person? Camden, do you have a, any thoughts on, like, you know, what you would say to him if you were to ask him a question? Or,
I mean, I don't know where to start. I you know, as any good apologist should, I think just spend time getting to know him and
that's
where
right.
he's coming from.
Yeah.
Van Til would always say you always need to be ready to buy the next cup of coffee.
Exactly.
Which shows his pastor's heart and in being an apologist, which is often forgotten.
Yeah.
But,
and that's
I don't
how
have
you
anything
find...
specific that I'd say other than just trying to be a real person, a loving person to him and,
yeah.
and understanding where he's coming from and then starting to address some of these issues head on at
yeah.
some point.
And then, you know, pointing out, finding the common ground. I mean, we have mentioned that family is clearly important in his
right.
album. And so, you know, that, you know, his family in terms of, you
there
know,
goes the police.
There we go. His, you know, his parents mean a lot to him. His daughter means a lot to him. His wife means a lot to him. Why is that the case? What makes the familial structure
right.
important in those
yeah.
relationships ultimately meaningful?
Right.
And, you know, as we said before, he might, I don't know, given that he believes in God, that would be an interesting answer. But that's where you might be able to start, is something that really means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I would probably say is I would begin to. Of course, within the context of, you know, trying to be a genuine person who cares, not trying, but being a genuine person who cares about him
yeah.
would be to ask him questions about the nature of what is obvious in his lyrics, which is that he loves his family
mm-hmm.
and he cares about him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and yeah. trying to explain the biblical things that he may have misunderstood and putting it in a proper biblical theology, systematic theology, you know, whatever,
right.
to just to meet his need of understanding who God is more accurately than, you know, a God who just puts up an unfair tree in the garden that seems magical.
Right.
That's a false view of Christianity.
Right. It's a false view of Scripture too.
Yeah.
So clearing those issues up, as well as, you know, asking questions about his family, is probably the appropriate apologetical way in to, you know, being a good, hopefully a good brother in Christ to David Bazan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a good apologetic. So the album, of course, is Curse Your Branches, and it is by David Bazan, founder of Pedro the Lion, which is now defunct. But you can check him out and check that out, I'm sure, on iTunes or Amazon.com, all sorts of other places if you want to listen. I would suggest listening with caution, as we mentioned. But you can visit us also online at reformedforum.org, and you can see what Jared and Jonathan are doing, at least in the admissions department, at youtube.com/WT, what is it?
Westminster Online.
Ah.
If you remember that for
Westminster
YouTube and
Online.
Facebook.
Facebook.com/Westminster Online and youtube.com/Westminster Online. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on the Reformed Media Review.
Yeah. I'll get to it.
You gonna put that on? This is Reform Forum. This is what we really do in the admissions office.
It's a pretty good beat.